Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
It was February 14th, Valentine's Day of this year. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. A 19-year-old male, whose name I will not mention here, set off fire alarms inside the school, and then when students filed out of the classrooms, he opened fire on them with an AR-15 assault rifle. Imagine those moments inside the school. Inside the classrooms and the hallways, the sound of gunfire just exploding, people screaming and crying. The students and teachers and staff wondering who's alive, who's wounded, who's dead, who'd be next. And of course, students were rolling audio and video on their cell phones while cowering in terror, many of those clips going viral online. And I guess in that way, we don't have to imagine what it was like. We have actual documentation. We have a record of those moments from inside the walls. Now, this is a short audio clip from inside the school recorded by a student. Be advised, it is disturbing, so skip ahead 30 seconds if you don't want to hear it. This clip went viral on the internet. It was picked up by news agencies around the world. And in the clip, the students are huddled on a classroom floor. They're trying to stay away from the windows. And outside the door, there's a killer firing an AR-15. This is the audio.
Holy.
Oh, holy. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
The shooter eventually dropped his weapon, and then he blended into the crowd, and he took an Uber away from the school, away from the scene. He was apprehended about an hour later by the authorities. At 6:27 in the evening on the 14th of February, the Broward Sheriff's Department posted a tweet with the final death toll, 17. And again, the finger pointing began. It's a gun problem. How did this guy legally obtain a semi-automatic weapon if he had a history of being emotionally unstable and making threats and being violent? Why should any civilian own a weapon like the AR-15? Well, if he was emotionally unstable, it was a mental health issue, not a gun issue, others said. And, of course, the United States has a dismal record on mental health diagnoses and treatment. It's the gun. It's not the gun. It's the missed signals. It's the culture we live in. It's mental health. It's video games. It's a generational problem. It's this. It's that. And this passionate arguing and debate and conflict about the solution, hell, about the problem, continues even now. Now, for years, The Onion, right, the satirical website, The Onion, has been reposting the exact same article with the exact same headline every time there's an active shooter event in the United States. The text of the whole article, the whole thing, is exactly the same. Every time they post it, they only change the location and the shooter, the specific details. But the rest of the article is exactly the same in every incarnation. And the article is titled, "No Way to Prevent This, Says Only Nation Where This Regularly Happens." And this was again the case on the 14th. This time, Dateline, Parkland, Florida, 2018. The Onion's satirical look at a very serious epidemic of gun violence in America. It's sharp, it is tragically on point, and it says this. In the hours following a violent rampage in Florida, in which a lone attacker killed 17 individuals and seriously injured over a dozen others, Citizens living in the only country where this kind of mass killing routinely occurs reportedly concluded Wednesday that there was no way to prevent the massacre from taking place. Quote, "This was a terrible tragedy, but sometimes these things just happen and there's nothing anyone can do to stop them," said Indiana resident Harold Turner, echoing sentiments expressed by tens of millions of individuals who reside in a nation where over half of the world's deadliest mass shootings have occurred in the past 50 years, and whose citizens are 20 times more likely to die of gun violence than those of other developed nations. "It's a shame, but what can we do? There really wasn't anything that was going to keep this individual from snapping and killing a lot of people, if that's what they really wanted." At press time, residents of the only economically advanced nation in the world where roughly two mass shootings have occurred every month for the past 8 years were referring to themselves and their situation as helpless. That's the satirical article from The Onion. And once again, we're watching as everybody everywhere weighs in with an opinion on this thing. President Trump wants to arm teachers. Well, some teachers. Roughly 20% of teachers, he says, who would get special training, many of them already equipped with special training because they've been in the military. Here's Trump in his own words.
"You'd have a lot of people that'd be armed, that'd be ready. They're professionals. They may be Marines that left the Marines, left the Army, left the Air Force, and they're very adept at doing that. You'd have a lot of them, and they'd be spread evenly throughout the school. So the other thing, I really believe that if these cowards knew that that was, that the school was, you know, well guarded from the standpoint of having pretty much professionals with great training, I think they wouldn't go into the school to start off with. I think it could very well solve your problem."
Trump also felt it necessary to tell us that had he been there, he would have himself rushed into the school to save the students, even if he had not been armed. Well, thank you for that. So the National Rifle Association goes on the defensive and the offensive, right? While Parkland students and others are out there campaigning for new, more restrictive gun laws, NRA Chief Executive Wayne LaPierre declares gun control advocates uncaring about school children, saying that they have another agenda. Quote, "They want to make all of us less free." And here we go again. We see the linking of the ownership of guns, hell, semi-automatic assault rifles, to freedom in America, individual liberty, and the intent of the founding fathers. Somehow they're all tied together. And if you restrict the gun, you restrict American freedom. The National Rifle Association wants more armed security guards at school. The NRA released a video that claimed the mainstream media was culpable in demonizing the gun and law-abiding, peace-loving gun owners everywhere. Dana Loesch, spokesperson for the NRA, said as much at the American Conservative Union Convention, CPAC. Dana Loesch making an appearance on media outlets across the country, including talking to CNN anchor Allison Camerota. And they had this exchange about why she thinks that many in legacy media love mass shootings.
Let's just start with the soundbite that we just played of you at CPAC. You say many in the media love mass shootings. You guys love it. You love the ratings. Crying white mothers are ratings gold to you. So, Dana, why would you make a statement like that?
Because it's true.
You think we love mass shootings?
Well, I said many. I said many, not all. But I do think that the way that the network, and I do think that many in the media do, because they like the ratings aspect of it. No. And that's true, because it's wall-to-wall coverage. They put the murderer's face up on loop on televisions all across America more than they discuss even the victims or survivors.
Hey, listen.
That individual's name has been mentioned and is still mentioned on your network. And Allison, I want to say something too really quickly. I think Jake Tapper did an admirable job. Mm-hmm. I think he ultimately lost control. I have a lot of respect for Jake. I think it was a tough spot that he was in also. But I do think that maybe perhaps the way that the network was hosting this discussion, it didn't seem that the network perhaps intended for it to be geared towards discussing solutions, which I get it. Emotions are high and it's awful. I mean, it's not even barely been a week ago, but I really want to have that discussion what we can do to stop this
in the future. That's why we had the town hall. So listen, that's why we had lawmakers there so that the kids could pose questions directly to them. But Dana, it's just malicious, actually, that you would say that. I don't know anybody in the media who likes mass shootings. You're wrong on every single level. We pray that there's never another one. And the idea of them being ratings gold. Hold on, Dana. Let me answer this.
I have to.
You just made a malicious statement, and I have to respond. Guess what? They're not ratings gold because Americans have reached saturation level. They're so sick of it. It's so heartbreaking that they actually often turn away. And we still have the conversation trying to find solutions.
You're saying that, though, it's malicious. You're saying that it's malicious, but yet on your network, you've allowed accusations against me and millions of law-abiding Americans and to be indicted as child murderers. I've watched you, Allison, on your program at this very time slot. And you've allowed that to stand uncorrected on your network.
What about the survivors, you know, the student survivors of the attack? There was a CNN town hall meeting. It was hosted in Sunrise, Florida. Students, parents, teachers, law enforcement all came together. Shooting survivor Cameron Caskey asked this question to Senator Marco Rubio. I'm going to play this segment unedited. I'm going to leave the applause and everything in so you can hear kind of the temperature of this exchange.
This isn't about red and blue. We can't boo people because they're Democrats and boo people because they're Republicans. Anyone who's willing to show change, no matter where they're from, anybody who's willing to start to make a difference is somebody we need on our side here. And this is about people who are for making a difference to save us and people who are against it and prefer money. So, Senator Rubio, can you tell me right now that you will not accept a single donation from the NRA in the future? I wish I could have asked the NRA lady a question. I wish the NRA lady I could have talked to, because I would ask her how she can look in the mirror, considering the fact that she has children, but, you know, maybe she avoids
those.
What
was that? I'm sorry?
I don't freaking know.
That's okay. The question is about NRA money. So, number one, the positions I hold on these issues of the Second Amendment, I've held since the day I entered office in the city of West Miami as an elected official. Number two, the answer to the question is that people buy into my agenda. And I do support the Second Amendment. And I also support the right of you and everyone here to be able to go to school and be safe. And I do support any law that would keep guns out of the hands of a deranged killer. And that's why I support the things that I have stood for and fought for during my time
here. More NRA money?
That is the wrong way to look. First of all, the answer is people buy into my agenda.
You can say no.
Number second, well, the influence of any group.
We're going to be here all night.
The influence of these groups comes not from money. The influence comes from the millions of people that agree with the agenda. So the millions of Americans that support the NRA and who support gun rights groups.
Sorry, Senator.
Guys, if you...
Cameron is having a conversation with Senator Rubio. Let them talk.
Listen, I respect... You can ask that question, and I can tell you that people buy into my agenda. I will answer any questions you guys have about any policy...
Right now. Guys, be quiet.
And I just think that ultimately, that is not our goal here. Our goal here is to move forward...
Wait, so hold on. In the name of 17 people, you cannot ask the NRA to keep their money out of your campaign?
I think in the name of 17 people, I can pledge to you that I will support any law that will prevent a killer like this.
No, but I'm talking NRA money.
No, because...
Matter of fact, I bet we can get people in here to give you exactly as much money as the NRA would have.
But it's not. I understand. And
adding fuel to all this, beyond the lobbying power and money and influence of the NRA, an organization that I personally find just tragically wrongheaded, beyond all this is this American link, you know, this cultural link between guns and God. We see it all the time. God and guns is a thing in the United States of America. And on top of the claim that owning a firearm is a right, given by, like a divine right given by God, which is something that the NRA is pitching. There's also a narrative out there that a culture that is not godly enough, not Christian enough, is more likely to call down gun violence because it doesn't warrant God's protection. We walked away from God, therefore he couldn't do anything, as 17 of our students were horribly killed. There's a former Utah congressman, his name is Jason Chaffetz. He did an interview with Fox News. He's decided that in this day and time, what the kids need is more Jesus.
We need more good news, more good message, more of the good word reaching out to America. I think of those kids who went back to school today, you know, after that horrific shooting, and they need something more. They need a belief in God and in Jesus Christ. I think that would help.
In my own circle, a religious friend posted, like 3 days after the shooting, this meme, this t-shirt that reads, "Dear God, why do you allow so much violence in our schools?" Signed, a concerned student. And underneath is the answer. It says, "Dear concerned student, I'm not allowed in schools. God." Made my blood boil when I read it. I responded on social media. Looks like it's been shared over 9,100 times so far. I said, "I've seen this floating around on several threads. Essentially, American Christians are saying that because schools don't sanction Christian class prayers, prayer remaining an individual, personal, and constitutionally protected exercise by the students, this heathen culture prevented God from saving innocent children. It's one of the most crass and offensive displays of Christian privilege I have seen. In this country, freedom of and from personal religious belief is guaranteed, and the Christians co-opting the bloody corpses of children to shame the culture into accepting their pet deity should themselves be ashamed. Their faith isn't oppressed or persecuted. Christians in this country can believe, they can pray, even on the courthouse steps they can pray, worship at any private venue at any hour, display the symbols of their faith with jewelry and clothing, statues and flags and bumper stickers. In songs, they can find countless radio stations playing religious music. They can find a Bible in almost every bookstore and in many hotel rooms. They can hold public religious festivals. They can speak as loudly and proudly as they want about their God and holy book as long as it does not cross the church-state line. And these entitled Christians still claim oppression. They watch the headlines for calamity and then they essentially say, well, you non-Christians made it happen. You're responsible. Completely unconcerned with the nonsensical idea that humans could eject God from anywhere. And they remain blindly allegiant to a do-nothing deity that would allow the slaughter of kids to make a point. I find the whole thing maddening." If you see that meme floating around, don't let the false narrative stand. Say something. This was a real-world tragedy. It requires real-world solutions. And those who were trying to build a narrative of superstition and shame upon the victims, they should be quickly and publicly corrected. You know what? Try some of this with Allah, with Krishna, with Satan. You know, try to get that in school. Get those prayers sanctioned by taxpayer-funded institutions and school teachers and superintendents and school boards. Let's try that. "Dear Satan, we just commit this day to you, and we ask that you help the children to learn in Satan's name. Amen." Let's see how that goes over. You're going to say religion needs to be in school. You might as well prepare yourself because that's exactly what you're asking for, which is why I call it Christian privilege, because the Christians just assume a Christian God because they've been given so much latitude in this country. And then they claim persecution for their faith because they have to abide by that pesky Constitution. Now, things have gotten even crazier in the state of Florida. Specifically, I'm talking about House Bill 839, just passed, overwhelmingly passed by the Florida House of Representatives, sponsored by State Rep. Kimberly Daniels. Now, Daniels is a piece of work, okay? And I'm about to show you exactly what we're talking about. But to speak with some authority about this, I wanted to talk to Andrew Seidel, at the FFRF, the Freedom From Religion Foundation. They've been watching Kimberly Daniels down in Florida and some of the theocrats and some of this maneuvering with great interest. Andrew Seidel joins me here. Thanks for jumping in here to talk about this stuff, Andrew.
Always a pleasure, Seth. Thanks for having me on.
Kim Daniels is from outer space. Daniels is not just, you know, the standard politician invoking God for a few extra votes, pandering to the base. She's all in.
Oh, she definitely believes what she is selling versus just the politicians who are doing this just to pander and get a few votes, and they're willing to lie about what it is they believe. No, she definitely believes that she has exercised demons and met Predator in a hotel room and all the stuff that she preaches, she believes.
I gotta play this soundbite. She actually is on record, on video, preaching a sermon where she says she once met a demon in a hotel room. Check it out.
And when I woke up, it was 3 a.m. How many of you know? Something about 3 o'clock. I know that midnight is the witching hour, but it's something about 3 o'clock that all hell break loose at 3. I don't know what it is. I woke up, I looked over, it was 3 a.m. I was in a suite. I walked out of the bedroom part, and I walked to the living room part, and I'm going to close out with this. And I went to lay on the, and I wasn't asleep. I went to lay on the sofa, and I turned my back, and my face was to the back of the sofa. And all of a sudden, I smelled sulfur. But how about, I don't know what sulfur smell like. I must have been in the spirit. Because I say, that's sulfur. I ain't never smelled sulfur before and don't know what it is. And when I looked around, have any of you ever seen the movie Predator? He was in my room. And his fingers was like jelly. And when I went to say something, he snatched his hand and I was looking straight through his finger over my mouth. And all I was thinking about was, I should have got up out of here. I wasn't quoting no scriptures or nothing. I was like, I think I should have went on and made that move. Because that is Predator and I ain't sleep. And usually, you know, I told you how I say Jesus, Jesus, but something inside of me say, greater is he. Edobo shata. Hey, ha. Greater is he that's in me than Predator. And that thing loosed me and I got up running. And somebody on the team called on the phone, and I heard birds just flapping in the wall. I was saying, like, God, help me if I get up out of here.
So, Andrew, when you hear this, what's going on in your mind? This person is helping to shape policy for the state of Florida.
Yeah, I mean, I think the number one thing that everybody, and especially your listeners, really need to take away from this is that if you've ever thought about running for office and had a moment of self-doubt and said, you know, I'm not really qualified, throw that away and run for office now. Kim Daniels is the poster child for more non-religious people running for office. Instead of having Kim Daniels, who's in church preaching about how she saw Predator in a hotel room and there were birds in the wall and all this stuff and how she exercises demons. And then she goes on to say in other sermons that she is legislating to bring on God's kingdom. I mean, she's very explicit about her goals. She has a theocratic goal. So I think if you've ever thought about running for office and you've ever had self-doubt and said, you know, I'm not qualified or I don't know what I'd be doing, do it. Even if it's school board, work your way up. She actually started at the Jacksonville City Council, and then she came across our radar at FFRF last year because she uses her official title on Facebook to preach all the time. So we opened up an ethics complaint against her last year.
In light of House Bill 839, doesn't seem like it really worked, right? She is the force behind House Bill 839. You want to describe it? Talk about what it is, what it does?
Yeah, I mean, basically it mandates that all public schools in Florida display In God We Trust conspicuously in every classroom.
Oh, that ought to fix things, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in the wake of the shooting, their solution is to put up a freaking sign.
It's even, and you know what? It's even worse than that, actually, because we've actually been watching this bill since November. So it wasn't proposed and passed in light of Parkland. She just used Parkland. She used the bodies of dead children to push a religious agenda. And, you know, she even said when she was doing this in her big speech that got covered nationally, she said, you know, God told me not to politicize this, which was just, to me, it was, yeah, it was flabbergasting because she had already proposed it. She was, the only thing she was doing was politicizing it. So, it was disgusting on several levels, and it was certainly disheartening to see. But I think that the central point is this bill has no purpose whatsoever except to promote her religion.
Kim Daniels, a Democrat from Jacksonville, she did an interview with CBN, the Christian Broadcasting Network. Let me give you a quote from her. She was talking about the signs. She said, God is positive. I put that forth like that because people want to make God a negative thing. God is good, and God is the creator. He's the initiator. He's the Alpha. He's the Omega, and our children need to see that because the eyes are the gateway to the soul, and so they need to see that symbol. And it needs to be imprinted on their minds and in their heart what it meant to the people who came to this country for religious liberty, which slides us right back into the God and country and Christian nation narrative once again.
Yeah, I mean, and it's hilarious. You know, they act like we're founded on this idea, and Florida adopted the same motto as the United States, In God We Trust, which, I mean, first of all, get a little bit more creative at least. I mean, but anyway, they only adopted it in 2006. And the United States only adopted that motto in 1956. So it's not like this is part of our founding blood, sweat, and tears. This is just a Johnny-come-lately motto that's meant to make us seem more religious than we otherwise were. And it's a lie.
Is the In God We Trust thing a done deal? Or
it's not a done deal. It has to still go through the Senate, and it has to go through the governor. The Senate actually did a little bit of legislative blood magic, I guess you might call it, and they slipped it into a spending bill, an appropriations bill. So that muddies the water a little bit, and it makes it a little bit harder to actually stop if it's going to stop all educational funding. So we'll see where it goes. I think I wrote an op-ed that's going to be in the Orlando Sentinel, so hopefully that this will draw a little more attention to it. But I mean, really, it's a bill that is just meant to promote her religion. And I mean, we've seen it. We've seen the clips on your show. You know, her religion is out there. You know what else is just, I think maybe we should move for an amendment in Florida. Maybe we should move. We should say, you know what, you can go ahead and you can throw up In God We Trust if you want, but you have to make it a little bit more accurate. You have to at least put a question mark after it. If you're going to use those four words in that order, it has to come with a question mark, because we? I mean, who are they talking about when it's we? There was a recent study that showed that those kids in high school, those kids that are born after 1999, Generation Z, that 21% of them are atheist and agnostic. Not non-religious. Another 14% are non-religious, but 21% are atheist or agnostic. So, you know, those kids aren't part of the we in that statement. Basically, you have the government going into their classroom and saying, alienating them. And again, you know, which God are we supposed to trust in? You know, with this measure, the legislature is not just sowing religious division in, you know, the already fractious high school environment, but it's also abandoning its duty. You know, legislators, they're elected to find solutions. This is the debate they need to be having. Instead, they voted down even being able to talk about that, and instead said, you know what, we're going to go ahead and trust in a deity to furnish the solutions so long as we provide him with enough groveling legislation. I really think that the Florida legislature, it needs to get off its knees, and it needs to stop mouthing what Martin Luther King condemned as the pious irrelevancies and sanctimonious trivialities. And it needs to find real ways to protect and educate Florida's children.
Andrew Seidel of the FFRF, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Thanks for your perspective. Always great to talk to you, man.
Thank you for having me, Seth. Always a pleasure.
Let's start hearing from our listeners. Let's find out what you have to say about all this. On the switchboard, I have Matthew. Matthew, you're on the Thinking Atheist radio podcast. How's it going?
That's going pretty good, Jeff. How are you doing today?
I'm well. We're talking about God and guns. We're talking about AR-15s. We're talking about gun violence in America and around the world. Tell me what you think, brother.
First of all, I'm an ardent supporter of the Second Amendment. But I'm also an ardent supporter of gun control. First of all, well, let's talk about the AR-15, okay? The AR-15, yes, it's a tool. It's a tool that's used by military personnel. The AR-15 is a gun that was designed to do one thing and one thing only. It was designed to kill and maim humans as fast as possible. And I'm sorry, there's no need for that in American society. Nobody needs an AR-15. There's no reason to have it other than to kill people. It's the civilian version of the M16. And the M16 was designed basically to complement the AK-47, the Kalashnikov. During Vietnam, the North Vietnamese were using the AK-47s, and the Americans didn't have something suitable with the same type of firepower. And that's why the M16 was developed. It was developed for one reason. That was to kill North Vietnamese. I don't see a reason why it should be there. But on the other hand, I also support the fact that I personally own guns.
Specifically, what kind of guns do you own?
I own a 45 automatic. I have a couple of shotguns. And I own a rifle, a Remington 308. And I see no need whatsoever for an AR-15. It doesn't even make a good home defense weapon because it's too wielding for one thing. And if you're using it in your home, the ballistics of the round are so high velocity that it's going to go through the perpetrator, through a wall, and into the next room. And, you know, you're liable to injure somebody that's not even there. You know, if you're going to use a home defense weapon, a short-barreled, short-stock, 12-gauge pump shotgun is a much more effective weapon. If you've got somebody coming through the door, those four pellets are going to stop them. They're not going anywhere. And you don't have to be near as accurate. And it's not going to go through a wall. It's going to stop the guy, even if he's wearing a ballistic vest at that range. He's going down. You know, so I believe that we need federal gun laws, because what's happening is that you have a state, like I live in New York State. We have some of the strictest gun control laws in the country. But I can drive literally 200 miles south of here and buy an AR-15 at a gun store with no questions asked. I can also buy a handgun, too. You know, I can buy any gun I want by driving 200 miles south of here. Until we have a federal, something that takes care of all the states, you know, Chicago has some of the strictest gun control laws in the country. But you drive 45 miles outside of Chicago, and there's practically no gun control laws. And this is a statistic that just blows my mind, that nobody really talks about. 98% of all the illegal guns in this country, at one time or another, were legal guns. This country doesn't have a problem with people smuggling in guns. 98% of all the guns that are on the street at one time or another were legal. And people don't understand that. We have to do something about controlling these guns. Unless we do, we're just going to have another Florida. We're going to have another Orlando. We're going to have another Vegas. We're going to have another Columbine. We're going to have another, you name it. You know what I mean? We need to have federal gun control laws.
All right, Matthew. Well, I appreciate you sounding off on the show, man. I really do appreciate your perspective. And we're going to take several calls from the switchboard, as many as I can squeeze in amid all the other content, to make sure that our listeners' perspectives are heard. So means a lot. And thanks for listening. Thank you, Matthew.
Okay. You have a good day.
When I come back after this short break, some retailers are saying enough is enough and making very public statements. There's a church in Pennsylvania last week that decided to celebrate and honor the God of the gun by showing up to church dressed like 11th century chess pieces while holding, each of them holding an AR-15 and wearing a crown made from bullets. It happened. There are photographs. I will tell you the story after this. Hang on. Do me a favor, all right? Go check Amazon and Google. The phenomenon is real, my friends, with over 20,000 reviews in. Casper is averaging 4.8 out of 5 stars for the Casper mattress. And why is that? Well, honestly, it's because Casper has done some key things. With the original Casper mattress, they managed to combine multiple memory foams for support that have that just right amount of sink and bounce, a perfect balance. Unlike a lot of mattresses out there, Casper's helps you to regulate your temperature. You don't do that hot and clammy thing that a lot of memory foam mattresses do. They deal directly with you. That means you're not paying the mattress retailers markups. They do free shipping in the United States and Canada right to your door in this little magic box, out of which springs a Casper mattress that will change your life. And Casper actually has some options, two others besides the original. They've got the Casper Wave that has a patent-pending premium support system and the economical Essential mattress that has a streamlined design with a streamlined price. Now, I've already got a Casper mattress in my home. I love it. I'm buying two more. We're finishing out the furnishing, finally, of our home. Two guest rooms. They're each getting a Casper mattress. That is how much I love Casper. You can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep-on-it trial and get $50 towards select mattresses when you go to casper.com/thethinkingatheist and then use the promo code thethinkingatheist. Terms and conditions apply. That's casper.com/thethinkingatheist. Promo code thethinkingatheist. My patrons get a commercial-free version of this broadcast every week and a bonus show just for them every single month. Thank you so much for your support at patreon.com/SethAndrews. I've got Shane on the switchboard. Shane, you're on the Thinking Atheist radio podcast talking guns. What do you think, my friend?
I'm a little dissatisfied with the way the media portrays the argument. I feel like they focus on the wrong things, and you don't really get the debate how I think it ought to be. For instance, I think right now they're kind of overly focused on the AR-15 being the optimum thing that we need to find a way to tackle and, you know, age restrict. But honestly, I don't think that weapon is necessarily the problem. It's not the optimum weapon for school shootings. And I know that sounds kind of morbid to say, you know, since people just recently died, but it's not what you would pick if you wanted to have the maximum number of casualties, I don't think. Now, in an outdoor setting like the Vegas shooting, absolutely, because that's what it's designed for. Suppressing fire, wartime, you know what I mean? But I feel like in this case, it's just getting the media attention because it looks like a scary machine gun. And this kid picked it up and used it, and a terrible thing. And you know how politicians are, they just want to have talking points, and they want to point to the scary thing and tell you they're going to make it safe. Well, maybe we ought to talk about, do we want people to have guns, or do we want to be more like the UK? And it's like hunting rifles, small clips, highly regulated. I think you got to make a choice there. Do you want an armed populace or do you not?
The statistic that the AR-15 is and has been the weapon of choice for mass shootings in the United States, this resonates with a lot of people. This is the reason they're speaking about the AR-15. I mean, AR-15 has been the mass shooter's rifle of choice. How would you speak to that?
Well, and you never know. I mean, maybe in this case, we'll actually get to know his motivations because he didn't kill himself, which I think is probably a good thing for us and people that work with criminology. But you don't know how much of that's copycat, I would say. You know, is it just that, you know, they see it on the news or they can get one, you know, on Call of Duty? Or that's actually a pretty easy weapon to acquire. It's pretty popular just because of the caliber and the round and all that. And, you know, I'm a vet, so all us vets, we're qualified with it, so we know how to use it and clean it and, you know, repair it.
Now, I'm not talking about motive. I'm talking about this is the gun they chose because it was a damn efficient way of killing people.
Correct. And I agree.
And if you have military training and you have a military background and you are familiar with the weapon, you stand apart from a huge number of people who do not have your training and background, who have access to the weapon. Would you see two different measuring sticks there?
I agree. That makes sense. I just think that focusing on that. So, for instance, in this particular instance, if it were like an M5, like a shorter, smaller, it's still a high velocity rifle, but it's indoors. You can move around quicker. It's just focusing on, even though, again, it's more popular, more people pick it, that's fine. And they might pick it for the right reasons. Like I would argue the Vegas shooter picked it for the right reasons. I would argue somebody indoors is picking it for the wrong reasons. But again, you don't know why. And even though it's an easy one to focus on, I just feel like they're just going to go back to handguns. You got rid of every assault rifle somehow, you just magically did it. Handguns are more lethal indoors, for sure. I mean, the Virginia Tech guy killed tons of people with two handguns.
I'm a firearms owner. I've got a couple of handguns. In no way do I consider my 9mm and 380 remotely as lethal as an AR-15 or an M16. If I shoot a 9mm round or a 380 round, it's going to do some damage. But if You compare it to the damage done by the assault rifle. To me, they're in two different universes.
Again, it depends on what you mean. Like, are we talking room-to-room lethality? Are we talking, I want to pierce that sandbag because that guy's dug into in a position? It just has a different application. I mean, I'll give you for instance. So, like, worst-case scenario for me would be if somebody found out about, like, the AA-12 automatic shotgun. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I've never heard of an automatic shotgun, but yeah, it sounds, like sounds major. Yeah.
You ever see that movie Predators with Adrian Brody?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, that gun he has, it's an automatic shotgun, and it's designed to have no recoil. Holy cow, that would be terrifying.
Shane, I think I did see this weapon. Was it on Future Weapons?
It might have been, yeah. I caught it because there was some Russian cat shooting off double-handed on YouTube, but, you know, yeah. I just feel like if they get what they want, and you can magically get rid of all of them, they're just going to pick something else, and so then you've not really solved the problem, I don't think. You know what I mean?
So what is the problem?
The problem is, I'm guessing, something with the criminology of it. There's some motivation people have to do these things, and you have to get down to the base of why they choose to kill people. Is it infamy? I think maybe. One thing I think should be non-controversial is you report on everything, but hey, maybe don't show their face and their name. You could say what they had for breakfast, where they live, but don't give them that infamy.
If in a planet of 7 billion people in a nation of almost 400 million, if we speak honestly to the fact that you will never in all people eliminate the desire to kill, the desire to do harm, the desire to maim, the desire to go out and do violence to others. Does it then make sense to make the tools of violence, especially those designed for the military, less available to everyday people?
So I think there is a line. So for instance, I don't like bump stocks. I think that's a bad idea because it's basically a workaround to make it fully auto. And I think it's reasonable to draw the line fully auto. You know, mobsters were mowing down the cops in the, was it 30s or 20s, whatever it was, prohibition. So they were like, look, you can't have automatic weapons. That's a terrible idea. Because then it's like an arms race between the cops and whoever it is, gangsters, gang members. So I totally agree that's a good line to draw. You know, civilians don't need bazookas. But
yeah, but if you can fire off 60 rounds a minute anyway with a semi-automatic, it sounds like you're pretty close. You know what I'm saying? That's pretty damn lethal, man.
And I know that there's a lot of saturation of statistics of how awesome the AR-15 is. But an AK-47 does the same thing. It just maybe doesn't have as good accuracy. You know, and again, in certain environments, I assure you, a shotgun's going to do way more damage. It just is. I mean, maybe even maim more than kill. You know, I don't know what's worse. I guess killing worse, duh. But you know what I mean? Like, it seems like if you focus on that one thing, you're going to lose the fact that you're not solving the problem. It's how many times have we seen politicians that, you know, oh, my son got ran over because he walked out in the street while he was texting. Well, I know how we'll fix that. We'll make people undone by making it a law, and we'll fine you if you're texting and walking. Well, that sounds nice, but are you really solving the problem, or are you just making more laws? I don't know, you know?
So what would your solution to the problem be? I mean, if I hate to put the world's problems on your shoulders, singly, Shane, forgive me. I'd hate to do that to anybody, but I know we're all people of opinion. What do you think?
First thing, no faces, no names. That has to help. And we have to put the pressure on news organizations to do that. It's like when celebrity news come out, you got to fight that instinct. Don't go look. It's wrong. It's a crime. Same thing here. Don't look. Don't investigate. Don't give them what I'm imagining is part of what they want. For the Vegas thing, bump stocks are a bad idea. He used them and to great effect, unfortunately. And, you know, I'm okay with background checks in general. Like, I don't think you should just literally be able to buy a gun if you've got, you know, like a violent history. Like that's simple stuff.
Can you qualify in general for me? How about comprehensive background check? Would you support that?
Yeah, for the most. So, like, whatever. Look, we're regular folks. We're going to probably in 99.9% agree on the kind of people that shouldn't have a gun. You know, oh, you threatened your wife with a firearm in the last 6 years. No, you probably shouldn't have a gun. You know, like simple stuff like that. You know, you're violent crimes, things of that nature. You probably shouldn't have a gun. Now, you might get one anyway, but at least you can't just go to the Walmart and buy it. And I feel like it's people always have their little pets, you know, oh, it's all the over, you know, prescription of psychiatric drugs, or, oh, it's crazy people, or it's, I don't think any of that's true. I think that's kind of like the toothpaste fallacy. You know, if you want to be like, well, every serial killer brushes his teeth in the morning, it must be the toothpaste. Well, you don't know that. That's a, you know, correlative link. So I feel like the best thing to do is stop giving him infamy, do reasonable background checks, and, you know, even maybe as a societal, you know, I don't know if it's increasing, again, this is total armchair psychologist, but, you know, are we taking care of people? Are we closing ourselves off? you know, if you know your neighbor's crazy, and in this case, in the Florida one, I mean, they did try and report, you know, hey, he's acting funny, but stay connected to your community and your neighbors. Is he okay? You know, what's he thinking about? Talk to him, you know, don't just be like, ah, he's a weirdo and go back on your tablet, you know?
All right, Shane. Thanks for sounding off on the show, my friend. I greatly appreciate it.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks a lot, man.
I've got Nicole. Nicole, thanks for calling the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. We're talking about guns, a hot topic, especially in light of the tragedy in Parkland. What's your perspective on all this?
When people talk about guns and the gun debate, especially when it comes to Republicans and especially our president at the moment, they always seem to lay the blame not on gun violence, but mental illness and the lack of mental health in America. And to me, just broadly saying things like, oh, people who are mentally ill are the reason for gun violence and people who are mentally ill shouldn't have guns, they stigmatize people with mental illness. And people with mental illness are very highly stigmatized in America. And when mental illness is stigmatized, then people with mental illness are less likely to get the treatment that they need. And we have this idea in America that people with mental illnesses are violent, they're criminals, they're going to hurt you. But that just isn't true. In fact, they're far less likely than the general population to commit violence and to make crimes. In fact, they're far more likely to be the victims of crime and violence themselves.
I saw an article to this very effect just recently. It was speaking about we need to be reminded and remind each other that, number one, the vast, vast, overwhelming majority, extreme majority of people who suffer from mental illness are not violent. And two, what about the other nations on Earth with citizens who struggle with mental illness who don't have the gun violence problem that we see in the United States?
Exactly. Those are all things that we have to take into consideration. And even if you can make the argument, and you probably could make the argument, that the people who commit these mass shootings have a mental disturbance of some kind, whether that's a diagnosed mental illness or some other factor behind it, the root of the issue is that when we talk about gun violence, although we're forced to talk about gun violence after these mass shootings because of how horrible they are, most gun violence isn't these mass shootings. It's one-on-one interpersonal relationships. It's people who are either committing it against themselves in terms of suicide, or they're committing it against their spouses or the people that they know around them. And those people aren't generally mentally ill. If we're going to talk about needing to do background checks, it shouldn't be against the mentally ill. It should be against those who have a history of being a danger to either themselves or to others.
There was an article in The Guardian that said since 1968, since figures first began being collected, there have been recorded 1,500,000 plus gun-related deaths on U.S. territory. That's since 1968. What would your solution be to the problem of gun violence in the United States and around the world?
Well, I definitely think we need better background checks, and not against the mentally ill, as I said, against those who have a history of being either danger to themselves or danger to others. So this includes those who perhaps are suicidal, you know, and have depression, which, yes, is a mental illness, but also those who have a history of spousal abuse or abuse towards children, animals, along those lines as well, who have been involved in violent crimes before. And I also believe that we need a national gun registry. When it comes to things like the AR-15, they are very scary because we see them associated with these mass shootings. But to be frank, at least in my view and what I know, most of the gun violence isn't committed by these AR-15s. They're just the guns that are responsible for the mass shootings because they have those high-capacity rounds. You can buy bump stocks for them. So really, when we talk about gun violence in America, I think there's two different problems. There's the problem of these mass shootings, but then there's also the problem that affects neighborhoods and affects communities on a very real day-to-day basis. And both of those issues have to be dealt with, and probably dealt with separately. And if anything, I would say the ones that affect the neighborhoods are a lot more important because those are the ones that bring up our numbers to the millions of Americans being killed.
Thank you, Nicole, for sharing your perspective on a very sensitive issue, but a necessary conversation. So greatly appreciated. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Beyond the whole Second Amendment thing, in a great many circles, certainly in Christian circles, there's a narrative that owning a gun, an AR-15 or whatever, any firearm, is not just a legal right, a constitutional right, but a divine right handed over by God. For so many, the link between God and guns is so palpable, so tangible, that some will attend church with an AR-15 in tow. And this is exactly what happened in Pennsylvania. It's the church that is headed up by the Reverend Sean Moon. It's the World Peace and Unification Sanctuary. And worshipers and congregants and attendees showed up clutching AR-15 rifles. The rifles were carefully zip-tied for safety, and no bullets were allowed. Well, of course, no one's going to have bullets in a pocket or a handbag or some other place. No, I mean, it's all the honor system. We'll just let everybody walk in. Over 100 people, as I understand it, clutching their AR-15s, wearing crowns made of bullets. The Reverend Moon prayed for a Kingdom of Peace police and peace militia. The event took place last Wednesday, the last day of February. There's a school right next door to the church. They got wind of what was going to happen. The school canceled classes for the entire day. They were so weirded out by it. And you should. No, you must Google the photographs. Just Google Church, Pennsylvania, AR-15. They'll pop right up. You will see congregants dressed in bullet crowns in these white robes holding AR-15s as they worship and sing and pray together. I'm reminded of that scene from Beneath the Planet of the Apes, where they're praying to the almighty atomic bomb. Ah, yes, the almighty bomb. That's what came to mind when I saw it. It's really creepy. And if I was the superintendent of the school next door, I'd probably cancel classes as well. But they believe there's a divine link, God and guns. He's given us a divine right to protect our family, our friends, yes, our nation, against evil. We are the agents of justice, and our instrument is the AR-15. I don't know if they purchased the weapons just for this event or they had them at home. I'm guessing these people, you know, if this is their stance, probably already had one in the gun safe or in the gun cabinet at home. Back to the switchboard. Catherine, thanks for calling the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much for having me.
Let's talk about guns. Let's talk about gun violence, the AR-15. What do you think? What's going on in your mind about all this?
Well, I think the same thing, frankly. I've been thinking for years that we aren't looking enough at fact-based evidence and statistics in order to form a reasonable gun policy in this country. For some reason, we are immune to those facts, where other nations have been able to address that issue more properly.
What statistics are we talking about?
The sheer number of guns per capita. I think we're talking about the deaths by gun, the suicides, the homicides, the mass shootings. When you look at them, they are directly correlated to the availability of guns. There's really not any sufficient argument to counteract that, as much as many will try. The facts just don't back that up.
So, I mean, you've been having these discussions out there, I'm sure. What are some of the things that you're hearing that just drive you the most crazy?
I think there's a very vocal minority among the gun extremists, and that is different than the category that I would classify as gun owners. I think they are distinctly different. I know many people who own a gun who are completely for a lot of the reasonable gun control measures that have been suggested and proposed over the years. I think there is this vocal minority that is, ironically, as much as they claim that the gun control advocates are acting out of, you know, pure emotion, or they like to talk about our feelings after a mass shooting, the reality is that their feelings have really been driving this bus for far too long. feelings of inadequacy, feelings of fear, fear of the other, feelings of being afraid of many outsiders, lots of irrational fears that aren't really based in fact. There's a very big difference between actual danger and perceived danger. And I think that's a big part of the problem. Some of these extremists are told that this is the problem, and they believe that, and they're being told that by groups like the NRA leadership. I think it's kind of ironic that most of the NRA members actually seem to statistically approve of many of the potential measures that could put a big dent in a lot of these gun deaths.
Think the NRA is going to actually see some consequences? I know the big retailers are walking away, and there are some other protests out there here and there. Do you think the NRA is going to really take it in the teeth over this, or do you think that its core will remain in place?
That's a very good question. Prior to the last 2 weeks, I would not have said that this type of situation could harm the NRA. But there is something distinctly different about this time. I live in Connecticut, and of course, everybody said, you know, if we didn't change things drastically after Sandy Hook, then nothing will. If a bunch of dead 5 and 6 year olds doesn't get, you know, a country to look at itself and examine its own policies, then what will? And I kind of agreed with that. And I was very disheartened the last 5 years or so since Sandy Hook. But I think one of the Parkland school students put it very succinctly last week when they said, this is different because we, meaning the Parkland students, we are old enough to now fight some of our own battles. You know, the elementary school kids at Sandy Hook and those survivors were not. And I think that combination, along with the fact that the school in Florida that was attacked has some extraordinarily well-educated students, could just finally be the change. And I hope it does have some impact on the NRA. I don't think any of us have ever seen some of the corporate abandoning of the NRA ship, so to speak, that we've been seeing in the last week or two.
Interesting to watch the students spearheading, you know, exerting the leadership that we should have seen from the higher powers, so to speak. It's the students who have really stirred the pot and begun the movement.
Yes, and I am greatly encouraged by that. I believe that, yes, they're young, yes, they're idealistic, but they have the power with them. And yes, this is an emotional issue, and they certainly have the emotional support of the vast majority of the country. And I think that combined with some tough examination of facts and statistics and science and, you know, hopefully overturning the 1996 Dickey Amendment will really bring about some change.
Catherine, thanks so much for sounding off on the show. Greatly appreciated.
Right. Thank you.
At the time of this broadcast, and of course the news reports are changing all the time, several major companies have cut discounts for the NRA. They were giving discounts, and they've decided to stop. Delta Airlines, United, Enterprise Rent-A-Car, Avis, Hertz, MetLife, others. Dick's Sporting Goods made a public announcement and said it was no longer going to sell assault rifles in the stores. Walmart, the largest retailer on planet Earth, Walmart, they've been scaling back gun sales at their stores. They have raised the age limit for the purchase of ammunition or firearms to 21, and they banned sales on assault weapons. There's only one major retailer at the time of this broadcast that continues to sell semi-automatic assault-style rifles, Bass Pro Shops. Now, there are arguments, of course, that this is damage control. This is a public relations move by many of these retailers. Why were they offering NRA discounts to begin with? Why were they selling assault weapons to begin with? But it's something. It's a step. I actually liked the statement issued by Dick's Sporting Goods. Let me read this real fast for you. Issued February the 28th, it says, "We at Dick's Sporting Goods are deeply disturbed and saddened by the tragic events in Parkland. Our thoughts and prayers are with all the victims and their loved ones, but thoughts and prayers are not enough. We have tremendous respect and admiration for the students organizing and making their voices heard regarding gun violence in schools and elsewhere in our country. We have heard you. The nation has heard you. We support and respect the Second Amendment, and we recognize and appreciate that the vast majority of gun owners in this country are responsible, law-abiding citizens. But we have to help solve the problem that's in front of us. Gun violence is an epidemic that's taking the lives of too many people, including the brightest hope for the future of America, our kids. Following all of the rules and laws, We sold a shotgun to the Parkland shooter in November of 2017. It was not the gun nor type of gun he used in the shooting, but it could have been. Clearly, this indicates on so many levels that the systems in place are not effective to protect our kids and citizens. We believe it's time to do something about it. Beginning today, Dick's Sporting Goods is committed to the following. We will no longer sell assault-style rifles, also referred to as modern sporting rifles. We'd already removed them from all Dick's stores after the Sandy Hook massacre, but we will now remove them from sale at all 35 Field and Stream stores. We will no longer sell firearms to anyone under 21 years of age. We will no longer sell high-capacity magazines. We never have and never will sell bump stocks that allow semi-automatic weapons to fire more rapidly. At the same time, we implore our elected officials to enact common-sense gun reform and pass the following regulations. Ban assault-style firearms. Raise the minimum age to purchase firearms to 21. Ban high-capacity magazines and bump stocks. Require universal background checks that include relevant mental health information and previous interactions with the law. Ensure a complete universal database of those banned from buying firearms. And close the private sale and gun show loophole that waives the necessity of background checks. We hope others join us in the effort to let our kids know that their pleas are being taken seriously. Some will say that these steps can't guarantee tragedies like Parkland will never happen again. They may be correct. But if common sense reform is enacted and even one life is saved, it will have been worth it. We deeply believe that this country's most precious gift is our children. They are our future. We must keep them safe. Sincerely, Edward Stack, Chairman and CEO, Dick's Sporting Goods. I like it. We can argue that behind the scenes it's a business decision or a public relations move or damage control, but they're doing something. They're saying something. I like it. I'll take it. How's that? One last short break. In the final segment of the broadcast, I have on the switchboard a teacher who advocates the arming of teachers to help keep students and teachers safe in school. We haven't heard a lot of this narrative out there, but this particular teacher says that handguns for teachers, or at least some teachers, under certain conditions, is a good idea. I'm going to talk to him in just a few. Hang on. The title of today's broadcast is called The God of the Gun. We're talking about the gun problem, gun violence in America, and the claim by many that it's a divine right for human beings to possess a gun. I've got Mario on the switchboard. Mario, you're on the Thinking Atheist radio podcast. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Seth, for having me.
Let's talk about guns. What do you think?
It's a pretty hard debate, especially here in the U.S. nowadays with everything that's been happening.
You a gun owner, and how do you frame that?
Yes, sir. I actually am a gun owner. I own a couple rifles and a couple handguns.
Do you own a semi-automatic?
Yes. Yes, sir, I do. I own two AR-15s.
Okay, so you have two of the gun that has been so controversial in the wake of the shootings.
Yes, sir, I do.
Are you ex-military or anything? Are you just a collector?
Yes, I had served in the Marine Corps for 5 years.
Thank you for your service. Talk to me about your perspective as a Marine, as a person, a human being, an American citizen, a citizen of the world. What do you think about the AR-15 and the culture of active shooters?
I think it's a really hard subject to really debate because a lot of people like to bring, you know, politics and the Bill of Rights into it. But my personal opinion, even though I'm a gun owner and own that AR-15, I don't think we should possibly have this weapon be able to be purchased by people.
So even though you have two AR-15s, you don't think we should have them?
Correct, sir. And I know it might make me sound a bit like a hypocrite, but...
Well, I'm not trying to set you up here. I'm just trying to make sense of it, Mario. So.
Yeah. My view on that weapon system as far as civilian use has changed over the years, especially with the amount of recent shootings.
You know, it's funny. I was at a gun range with a friend. This is years ago when he has, you know, a litany of weapons. And he brought an AR-15. I got to shoot it. It was awesome. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I mean, it was, we were target shooting at the range, and it, you know, it was really cool. But this was before, I don't know how many shootings have taken place and how much AR-15 violence and how much things have escalated. And I had to reevaluate my own position and come to the same conclusion, I think, that you did. Like, why would any civilian require this weapon?
Correct. That's the way I was also. I said, I've always liked firearms. Used the military version, the M16, M4. And, you know, I bought one, an AR-15. And I would go, we would go shooting with the friends and we would all have a good time. A lot of us are vets. But after having two children, I have one in school with the plethora of shootings happening. Right after this Parkland shooting, I was laying in bed and me and my wife were talking. And I was like, you know, what if that happened to our son? So it made me really kind of reevaluate really hard on the ownership of that firearm.
As somebody who has had training, formal training with weapons, what's your take on the argument that we should arm those, the law abiding, to protect us against the shooters, against the violent, against the criminals, that more guns might actually keep us safe? You've heard the argument. What's your perspective?
Honestly, I don't think that's a very sane argument. You want to put more guns in people's hands when, I mean, you know, Lord forbid, you know, let's say that they decide to arm the teachers, like here in my state of Florida, they're deciding to do. So do you really want a shootout to happen in the hallway when children are around? If anything, I say we should probably put more police in schools. Do you want to pass a bill to do something like that, put in the hands of the actual community officers? That's my personal opinion. I know some people might not agree with it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think we could frame pretty much every perspective in a conversation about guns with, I'm sure some people won't agree with it. You've seen the discussions out there. It's just a shouting match. It's a frothing mess. It's this big cacophony of opinions. And I think most of us would agree on one thing. We'd like to see it solved. We'd like to see people safe, especially our young people, all of us safe. And so as you know, a Marine and as someone who knows the weapon in question, I appreciate your perspective very much on the show today. And I wish all goodness and safety to you and your kids and your family. Okay.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you for having me.
Have you seen that article that went viral? It was posted at scarymommy.com. And it's titled, "Fuck You, I Love Guns." The article says, in part, "I'm an Army veteran. I like M4s, which are, for all practical purposes, an AR-15, just with a few extra features that people almost never use anyway. I'd say at least 70% of my formal weapons training is on that exact rifle, with the other 30% being split between various and sundry machine guns and grenade launchers. My experience is pretty representative of soldiers of my era. Most of us are really good with an M4, and most of us like it at least reasonably well because it is an objectively good rifle. I was good with an M4, really good. I earned the expert badge every time I went to the range, starting in basic training. This isn't uncommon. I can name dozens of other soldiers and veterans I know personally who can say the exact same thing. This rifle is surprisingly easy to use. Completely idiot-proof, really. It has next to no recoil. It comes apart and cleans up like a dream. It's light to carry around. I'm probably more accurate with it than I would be with pretty much any other weapon in existence. I like this rifle a lot. I like marksmanship as a sport. When I was in the military, I enjoyed combining these two as often as they let me. With all that said, enough is enough. My knee-jerk reaction is to consider weapons like the AR-15 no big deal because it's my default setting. It's where my training lies. It's my normal because I learned how to fire a rifle in the Army, all caps. You know, while I may have only shot plastic targets on the ranges of Texas, Georgia, and Missouri, that's not what those weapons are designed for, and those targets weren't shaped like deer. They were shaped like people. Sometimes we even put little hats on them. You learn to take a gut shot, center mass, because it's a bigger target than the head. And also because if you maim the enemy soldier rather than killing him cleanly, more of his buddies will come out and get him, and you can shoot them too. He'll die of those injuries, but it'll take him a while, giving you the chance to pick off as many of his compadres as you can. That's how my drill sergeant explained it anyway. I'm sure there are many schools of thought on it. The fact is, though, when I went through my marksmanship training in the U.S. Army, I was not learning how to be a competition shooter in the Olympics or a good hunter. I was being taught how to kill people as efficiently as possible, and that was never a secret. As an avowed pacifist now, it turns my stomach to even type the above words, but can you refute them? I can't. Every weapon that a U.S. Army soldier uses has the express purpose of killing human beings. That's what they're made for. The choice rifle for years has been some variant of what civilians are sold as an AR-15. Whether it was an M4 or an M16 matters little. The function is the same. So is the purpose. These are not deer rifles. They're not target rifles. They are people-killing rifles. Let's stop pretending they're not. With this in mind, is anybody surprised that nearly every mass shooter in recent U.S. history has used an AR-15 to commit their crime? And why wouldn't they? High-capacity magazine, ease of loading and unloading, almost no recoil, really accurate, even without a scope. But numerous scopes available for high precision, great from a distance or up close, easy to carry, and readily available. You can buy one at Walmart, or you could. Or just about any sports store, and since they're long guns, I don't believe you have to be any more than 18 years old with a valid ID, and again, that's changing. This rifle was made for the modern mass shooter, especially the young one. If he could custom design a weapon to suit his sinister purposes, he couldn't do a better job than Armalite did with this one already. This rifle is so deadly and so easy to use that no civilian should be able to get their hands on one. We simply don't need these things in society at large. I'll link to the entire article in the description box in case you'd like to go and read the entire thing for yourself. I've got Scott. Scott, thanks for calling the Thinking Atheist Radio Podcast. How's it going?
Good, good.
I'm taking calls on gun violence, the god of the gun, the divine right to own an AR-15 or weapons in general, and I'm interested in your perspective. What do you think?
Okay, well, my perspective is a little bit different than my outlying district. I am from Kansas, but my district is relatively liberal, and they take a different tact on it. I'm a teacher, and I'm very concerned about the gun violence that's occurring, but I also take to the belief that, you know, you can only stop a shooter with another shooter. I mean, that's why we call the police. I'm an advocate of training teachers to utilize guns in emergency situations, just as I'm trained to operate the heart shock monitor system that we have employed in our school, in addition to administering CPR and grabbing a fire extinguisher and putting that out if that's the case.
With all the teachers who were saying, this isn't what I signed up for. I went to college. I got an education. I chose the career of teaching, not firing a weapon at a potential target, human target, who might be accosting the kids. This is not what I signed up for. You hear any echoes of that in the teacher circles in which you're involved?
Yeah, I do. But I also don't hear them stepping up when they say, you know, I didn't sign up for doing the various other roles that teachers have to play. Other than just teaching. I mean, we examine statistics. We employ equity standards in our districts. There are a lot of rules that we as teachers do that don't directly pertain to teaching a student. And even with this last shooting, we have teachers that are playing the role of child protectors without a gun. And I'm a little bit offended when a person that doesn't know me stereotypes me as being a 75-year-old lady who's teaching and cannot shoot a gun. In a situation and proper training, I think a teacher can shoot a gun as well as anybody else.
When you're at the teacher lounge, certainly you guys have talked about it. I mean, I'm not asking you to betray a confidence, but what's the temperature of the other teachers you're talking to inside the school?
Well, like I said, I'm from a liberal district, and I think the liberal side is presented in education most of the time. We do have some conservative teachers. I wouldn't consider myself either or. I'm more of a libertarian per se. I try to look at issues based on the evidence and come to my own conclusion. But I think for the most part, I think teachers back the liberal leaning left people in the district. And I think that for the most part, they want to make it more of a gun issue with the NRA and stuff like that, than as opposed to what I think practically could be done to stop a shooter.
Well, there are many conservatives who don't think teachers should have the responsibility to have a shootout with an armed shooter. It's not just a liberal thing, is it?
I would say it's more of a liberal thing.
Do you think all conservatives want to arm teachers?
No, I wouldn't go to that far. I would say that given the conservative belief of being able to defend yourself with the weapons that you choose, I would think that a conservative would be more likely to back the arming of teachers. And you know, I've gotten in some debates on Facebook about this, where we've had people describe the absurd, where we have people just, you know, teachers carrying guns into schools. That's not what I'm proposing, and that's not what I've heard has been proposed. We're talking about training teachers that, you know, have guns stored either in a gun case that's locked, combo locked, and if they are accessed, they automatically set the alarms off, very similar to a fire extinguisher type of situation, and well-trained, ongoing training. I propose the 3 or 4 teacher being trained in the building, because you have a situation where nobody knows exactly who that is, so a shooter can't come in and just take those people out. But I don't advocate all teachers carrying a gun into the school, especially if they aren't trained.
You yourself, you'd keep a firearm in the classroom and a gun safe?
Absolutely. I actually do keep a firearm at home, and I lament the fact that I haven't been able to take the type of training that I would like to take to handle a firearm. Here in where I'm located at, the training consists mainly of stationary shooting at a target in a gun range, whereas I would like more of an open air style training where you can holster your gun and pull it out and shoot it while ducking beneath objects and around objects like that. I just don't see a whole lot of those opportunities in the area I'm at right now.
Scott, last question. As a teacher, do you fear? I mean, do you have a palpable fear of an active shooter event inside the walls of your particular school? Do you ever see a student and think, holy shit, you know, they're capable, or they might be, one day this might happen here?
That's funny that you should ask that. Yes, I've come across a few students that I thought could be potential shooters. But I really don't think, I don't go into school each day afraid of the fact that somebody's going to shoot it up. I teach in a school that has some security issues in it that I think need to be addressed pretty soon. And they're trying to. But for the most part, I am not afraid. I'm a statistics guy. I like to go with the statistics. And I think in this instance, it's so low, it's not really worth concerning myself with that. I am a carry conceal individual, but I don't carry a gun on me that much. When I first got it, I did. But I, again, in a situation, I could be in a grocery store, I could be at a restaurant, I could be in my car and be attacked with a gun. And I'm not really that concerned about it. I live in a relatively safe community, but in that instance, in a house invasion, I wanted to be prepared. So I do keep the gun on me, but I'm not concerned at school at all.
So you hold the narrative that the best way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun.
Absolutely. That's who we're calling. All right. In the instance of a bad guy showing up, we're calling the police and they have guns. So, you know, we've got to avoid... we got to wait 4 minutes for the good guys to show up, and I think it's best to have the good guys with the guns right when it happens.
All right, Scott, thanks for sharing a perspective on the show.
Thanks, Seth. I appreciate it.
I've got Jim on the switchboard. You are on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. How's it going, man?
It's going pretty good, Seth. Welcome from Pensacola.
We've been talking about Florida and Representative Kim Daniels and some of the insanity going on down there with the In God We Trust, supposedly about to be mandated for display in all the schools. You must be shaking your head.
Well, there's always something going on in the state of Florida. You know, we've got a cross issue in Pensacola at one of our major parks. There's an ongoing legal battle to get that thing taken down, and the city keeps appealing at my taxpayer expense.
Weird how they seem to think this symbolism is going to be some sort of a spiritual solution, right? This is how they fix the culture, which they consider to be the root of gun violence and violence of every kind.
That's exactly right. And, there's a church on almost every corner with a cross on almost every church, so I really don't see why we need one in a public park.
What do you have for the show today, my friend?
Well, I just want to talk to you a little bit about my affiliation with the NRA. I've kind of evolved over time on this gun issue, liberals, I got older. But I became a life member of the NRA probably around 1991-ish. So it's been a long, long time ago. They were more reasonable back then when it came to, you know, sensible things like, certain type of ammunition other things, background checks. They were more open to those types of discussions. But anyway, over the years, the NRA's became more and more, in my mind at least, affiliated with the very right-wing, almost white supremacist part of the Republican Party. So they're way, way on the right side of just about everything. And I just thought about this whole thing over the years, and I decided last year to just, you know, do away with my membership. Even though I was a life member, I'd paid a good sum of money to become a life member, so I didn't have to pay annual dues anymore. And so I went on the website and sent them an email that I wanted to cancel my membership. And they sent me back an email that said, well, you know, per our bylaws, you have to do it a certain way. So I had to write the NRA a letter to get my membership rescinded. So
you still have the letter?
I do have the letter.
How long is it? Is it like, you know, 3 pages or is it a few paragraphs or what?
It's just a real short paragraph or a couple paragraphs, yeah.
Yeah, dude, if you got it, if you don't mind, I'd like to hear what you had to say to the NRA.
Okay. Well, it's got my NRA member and it's addressed to the National Rifle Association. Attention, the director of membership. And that's per the bylaws, how you're supposed to cancel a membership. And it says, I've been an NRA life member for over 2 decades. In recent years, organization that I was once proud to be a member of went into a radical tool, the far right wing of the Republican Party, huddled near the white supremacist crowd. I am ashamed to have helped fund your decline, and I no longer wish to be associated with your anti-American nonsense. Please cancel my membership and remove my name from all of your contact lists immediately and notify me in writing of your action.
Get a response?
No response. The NRA sends out a magazine monthly, and it took almost a year for them to quit sending me that magazine. So it's, I guess, a fairly slow process for their gears to turn and for a membership to be canceled.
Sounds a lot like people who have to write that letter to the Mormon church to try to have their names withdrawn from the rolls. Some people have had to threaten litigation because people like the sort of inflated membership numbers. Losing you means losing a number, right? Losing support.
It does. And I have to just imagine that there are so many people who are annual members who are just stopping to pay their dues, and life members who did just like I did and just said, you know, I've just had enough of this nonsense. You people are just too far out of the mainstream for me to participate in this anymore.
Jim, do you still own a firearm?
I do. I've got a concealed carry permit here in Florida and got several handguns. My dad passed away in 2015 and left us kids with several gun safes full of guns and ammunition. And I actually inherited a Bushmaster AR-15, which is the same weapon that's being used in a lot of these mass shootings. And I didn't really have a need for it. I had about 650 or 700 rounds of brand new ammunition, the Bushmaster AR-15. So I've got a good friend of mine who has a much different view on guns than I am. Been friends with the guy forever, but he's stable. He's not going to pull off anything like this. And I sold the Bushmaster and all the ammunition to him last month for the great price of $350.
What do those things run new?
They're around $700. I think, you know, during the Obama gun scares, they would reach up around $1,000, but they're down to just over $500 now. And that's just $500 for a killing machine, you know. And I want to add something about this transaction with this good friend of mine. Under Florida law, you can make a personal sale of a firearm to another individual, and there's no paperwork involved. I didn't have to make sure he had a background check, that he had a concealed weapons permit, or anything like that. So even though I sold it to someone I knew for about 20 years, I could have sold it to anyone on the street for $350, along with all that information or all that ammunition. So that's a big loophole in these laws as well, is these person-to-person transfers of firearms where there's absolutely no paperwork involved whatsoever to make that happen. Now, not all states are that way, but in the far-right gun-leaning states like the state of Florida, that is the law of the land.
Jim, let's talk about concealed carry for just a second. There are some people in this country, certainly some people outside of our borders, who wonder why you and I would have it. Well, why in the world would you want a gun permit? And why do you have a gun? Are you compensating for something? You the big man? Are you paranoid? Are you a violent person? You know, I mean, these are all legitimate questions, because you and I have both seen the guys who are out there. You know, they're standing on top of the Jeep, leaning up against the roll bar with a couple of semi-automatics in each arm, and they're getting off on the gun. I mean, I get it. I understand why this culture is so often in the crosshairs. But you and I, as peace-loving people, as people who are grieved by gun violence, owning guns, to some other people, that's a paradox. That makes no sense to them. If you were to be asked about this over coffee, how would you respond?
Well, I'm a big proponent of the Second Amendment. Like the courts have recently ruled, I believe it's an individual right to own a firearm, but with just like the First Amendment, you know, there's restrictions on every right that you have under the Constitution. And I think that there should be stricter restrictions with regard to gun ownership for things like that Bushmaster, you know, some AK-47s or whatever. But as far as peaceful people who have gone through a background check, through a vetting process, I don't think it's all about risk management. And what you're doing there is you're cutting the risk of someone misusing that firearm down significantly. The last time I looked, there's about a million residents of the state of Florida who have a concealed carry permit. And they publish the numbers on the state website that shows how many have had their concealed weapons permit rescinded over the last year. And the number is like, you know, 100, 150 or something. It's just a super small number compared to that million count of people who have concealed weapon permits. And I think that goes a long way to the whole process of vetting and licensing people to have a firearm. And it's, you know, it's certainly not, you don't have to do that to own a firearm, but you do have to carry one concealed. And I think probably the way that we need to go is to make licensing a requirement across the board for anyone who owns a firearm. And I think that that would probably be supported constitutionally if that were to ever become law. But that's not going to become law as long as the NRA has the kind of power that it has over our legislatures, both at the state level and the federal level.
Well, Jim, I just wanted on the record, had I ever been an NRA member, I would want you to help me formulate my resignation letter, because that was just badass. Well done. Okay.
Seth, it was kind of like, coming out as an atheist. It was just, you know, it made me feel better as a person to do that. And getting the NRA out of my life was a big comfort as well.
Jim, I appreciate you so much. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling.
All right, Seth, I'll see you in Oklahoma later this month.
Oh, you're going to be at the American Atheist National Convention in Oklahoma City in a few weeks.
I am indeed. I was in
Charleston. That's a long drive, my friend.
I don't doubt it's not.
Well, it'll be an honor to shake your hand. I'll be there all weekend, my friend. We'll see you soon, okay?
All right. Appreciate what you do, Seth.
And that's it for the show today. Although I am convinced that the discussions, I'm sure passionate and often heated discussions, will continue in your own circles, online, certainly in the comments section. It's my hope that as we're out there debating and talking about all these things, that we will prepare ourselves to be willing to, you know, not just be right, not try to just win the argument, but to land on and support and champion the best ideas, the best solutions, even if it means changing our own minds, our own perceptions on these issues for the good of everybody. We can all go out there as honest brokers in these discussions and just try to fix it, whatever it takes. That's ultimately what we want, or at least what we should want. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Thanks to everybody who participated. And I will see you back here next week. Take care.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on The Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.